Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello there, friends, and welcome to this episode of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, where we are going to, as we do every day, prescribe hope for healthy families. Now, we always talk about parenting issues, but today we've got a really special episode for grandparents. And I am so excited to talk about this. We have an amazing guest. His name is Larry Fowler, and he is the founder of Legacy Coalition, which is a national ministry focused on equipping Christian grandparents to fulfill their biblical role of impacting grandchildren. And he has done a lot of amazing things through his organization and his new calling. He has a book, and we are going to talk all about that. But before I introduce him and bring him on officially, I cannot go through this episode without saying happy birthday to my grandmother, my sweet granny. Now, most of you, if you're listening, if you're regular listeners, you know that I lost my granny on September 17th of this year. And today is her birthday, though, and I am thinking about her so, so very much. Now, you know that I wrote a book called Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. And in that book, I tell the story of my granny and the impact that her legacy had on my life. And in fact, I'll tell you a little secret. If you look at the cover, you will see the image of a keyhole in a door. And that was inspired by the key that my granny gave me to live with her, an actual physical key. I lived with her for quite some time, for several years before I got married, and all through nursing school. And she gave me a key not only to her front door, but to a new door to my future. Now, to give her adequate tribute, I want to tell you that my granny was a woman of amazing faith. She was raised in the Church of Christ, but she fell in love with the training union director. Is there anyone out there who remembers those? At a Baptist church, and she started going to a Baptist church, and she never stopped. And my grandfather experienced some hurt related to the church, and so he stopped going before I was even born regularly, but she did not let that stop her. She was the kind of person that when I went over to her house, her guidepost devotional, does anyone have those really? I mean, I'm doing all kinds of blasts from the past, but she would have her guidepost open to the right day without fail. And her bookmark was her tithing check. Now, I was so blessed to sit in church with her for almost 40 years. I sang in the choir with her. I went to Christmas programs with her. I, you know, just everyday life with her. And she had such an impact on me. And that is one of the reasons why I'm so excited to do this show and to encourage grandparents who are out there, because we talk a lot about the challenges that are facing this generation of kids, Generation Z. And grandparents, they need you more than ever. You have something that their parents often don't have, and that's extra time. You also have old school skills that they need. They need that social connection, and they crave it. So without further ado, we are going to dive into this topic, and I want to officially welcome Larry Fowler, again, the founder of Legacy Coalition, a national ministry to equip Christian grandparents. Larry, welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We're so glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Jessica. It's great to join you.
Well, why don't you just share a little bit about your testimony, Larry, and what I shared my story of my grandmother. What is your story of how you came to be so passionate about equipping grandparents?
Well, it actually started with the birth, of course, of my first grandson. But really, in those first years of being a grandfather, I didn't think a lot about my role. And then my daughter's marriage failed. She had a husband that made one very wrong decision after another. And after a number of years, she and her three little ones moved in with my wife and I. And I became both dad and grandpa. And that was the beginning of me beginning to think about my role as a grandparent a little bit more seriously, because I didn't want those little boys to grow up, you know, carrying on the sins of their father. I wanted them to have a godly role model in their lives, and they're now young adults, and their faith is strong, and I'm thankful for that opportunity. But that was the beginning of me beginning to think more seriously about my role as a grandparent on a personal level.
Well, I really appreciate that. I appreciate your authenticity and transparency. And in your book, Larry, you talk about this, about how we don't talk about this. That's the irony there. And when you, yep. You actually shared a story when you went into a Sunday school class and you were listening to the prayer time, and every single prayer request from that group of parents and grandparents yep. was about a physical ailment, you know, my knee hurts or so-and-so has cancer, yeah. which we should pray about those things, right? But we are so afraid to reveal the truth that, ironically, we all know that we're not perfect. We're not perfect parents. Our kids are not perfect kids. What do you say to families who struggle in secrecy, especially in Christian circles, where their greatest fear is maybe not what's going on, but that someone might know what's going on?
Well, the first thing I would say is kind of what you just said. Every family is messy. There's some messiness in every family somewhere, because we're all sinners and we won't have perfect families until we get to heaven. And so that's a starting point, is just to realize that. And then sometimes somebody needs to break the ice and say, you know what, my family's really struggling. And they will find when they do that, that many other families will say, well, you know what, I've got a son, I've got a daughter, I've got a grandchild, whatever it is that's really struggling too. And transparency often generates other transparency. And that's really what we need to do in our small groups and in our classes and in our church congregations.
That's so true. And a lot of times what we need when we're struggling is not someone to fix us, but as actually my guest yesterday said, to journey with us. And there's something powerful about knowing that we're not alone and that we see hope. And I actually highlighted this in your book, Larry. You talk about this very poignantly. You say, sometimes in the months and years that follow the birth of a grandchild, the joy that you felt about their birth is crushed and hope is dashed. Relationships crumble, harsh words leave deep wounds, joy gets pushed aside by anger, bitterness, and resentment. When adult children make bad decisions and bring consequences that affect the whole family, hope fades, and a resignation to a less than ideal reality sets in. Now, I want to share with you, Larry, that you know I have experienced this. I have shared it through my book and with my listeners that I am estranged from my parents, and that was a very difficult journey. And I've been very clear about saying, I don't think that you should do that. If you're walking with the Lord, I don't think that you should do that without godly counsel, without professional counseling, because that is such a severe step. But it was really difficult for me with my mother-in-law when I first was having a baby, because I had all of these insecurities. And I thought, how am I going to be a good mom when I don't have a good relationship with my mom? And I pushed a lot of that on her. And I know she's probably listening. And Mom, I have to tell you, I'm sorry again. I know I've told her I'm sorry. But you know what she did, Larry? She did not get defensive. She didn't get angry with me. She didn't, you know, distance herself from me. She held my hair back when I was sick with morning sickness. She washed my laundry when I was on bed rest. She picked my kids up from school, other kids up, and loved them. And she loved her way in there. So you've talked in your book, and you've seen in your ministry a lot of different family situations. Can you give some of those other examples that you have seen of brokenness and distance in those grandparent relationships?
Well, we talk about the fact that, and I do this in my book, we talk about the fact that really all family difficulties from the grandparent perspective can be summarized by the word distance. But there are different kinds of distances. Grandparents struggle with grandkids that live at a physical distance from them. You know, geographically, they're not in the same location. And then, of course, there are the relational distances of what happens when when your son and daughter-in-law get divorced? How do you then connect with the grandkids on that? That's relational distance. And then there are so many grandparents that are struggling with spiritual distance when they have an adult child that walks away from faith or becomes cool toward it, maybe not walking away completely, but not having the same priorities. And grandparents are trying to figure out, how do I navigate those? And how do I still impact grandchildren? That's our passion. Our passion is that grandparents would be that impact in the lives of the grandchildren, just like you talked about your grandma was to you. And so we need to provide solutions and ideas that will help them to overcome these problems of distance.
Well, that's the exciting part about today, Larry, because we are going to get to share hope with our listeners. You have to do something different. If you're sitting in a situation that has been the same relational burden, the same relational pain, the same cycle of conflict for years, I would challenge you to stay tuned and listen to the ideas that Larry is going to offer. Now, the first thing that we have to say to frame that, Larry, it comes from chapter 3 of your book that's entitled, But They Won't Let Me. And you share about how often people will come up to you and they're focused on the other person, which is usually their children or their, you know, daughter-in-law, son-in-law, and saying, they won't let me see them, they won't let me be involved, and making sure you know that, like, they're in the wrong. But you said, this is tough, Larry. We're stepping on some toes, but that's not the right perspective, is it?
No, it isn't. I've had that phrase repeated in different words so many, many times, many, many times. I had a grandma come up to me one time and say, you know, my son has said I can either talk to my daughter about God or I can see her, but I can never do both because the minute I mention God to her, I'll never be allowed to see her again. And just like you said, she was putting all of the focus and the blame really upon the son, the adult son, the father of the little girl. And yet, in most conflicts, it's not 100-0 in terms of where the blame goes on one side or the other. And even if it's 98% and 2, and we're the 2, we need to ask for forgiveness for the 2 and take ownership of that. In fact, doing that will often be a very important first step towards reconciliation and making progress in the issue.
Well, that's a pretty tough thing. I mean, it's easy to say, yeah, you know, just the 2, but Larry, I can hear grandparents out there saying, but no, 2%? Like, it's really, I'm just 2%. But I think that modeling that, you know, that servant-heartedness and praying that God's power will be displayed in this. I think sometimes, you know, we just want to fix things on our own and we want to control things on our own, and we just can't do that. And one of my favorite verses comes from Psalm 84:11. I share it all the time. It says, "The Lord God is a sun and a shield. He gives grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those who walk uprightly." Now, this verse really spoke to me in a season of brokenness with my parents and then through my grandparents, which it's interesting, Larry, because, you know, there's a lot of generational brokenness in my family. But I look at my granny, who had the strongest faith of any of us, I would say, without a doubt. And somehow, when other relationships were estranged, she never was. She was never estranged from anyone. She just loved everyone where they were. And when I look back at that verse at Psalm 84:11, I see that I thought relationship restoration instantly was a good thing. But God did not see it that way and in his time. And he was a sun. He lit my path. He was a shield. He protected me from generational patterns of conflict and communication, you know, and I didn't see that then, but I see that now, and I recognize the focus is I have to walk with the Lord, live upright daily. And you do that, and the rest of it tends to fall into place. Well, do not go away, because we are just getting started in this conversation with Larry Fowler about the importance of grandparents. And when we come back, we'll talk about some practical strategies of what you can do in those specific situations of hurt. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to this special episode of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, where we are talking all things grandparenting. We have been having a really great conversation with Larry Fowler, who is the founder of Legacy Coalition, a national ministry focused on equipping Christian grandparents to fulfill their biblical role of impacting grandchildren. We have been talking in the first segment about the challenges that are facing grandparents today and some of the shame and the stigma that goes along with that, and how we can be afraid to share those things and to ask people to walk with us in faith. And Larry, before the break, we were talking about the role of grandparents, and you told me during the break that you want to rename grandparents. And I would love for you to share that with everybody, because I'm in favor. I'll vote yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you asked a question, or a good question to ask us. Why are we called grandparents? You know, why the word grand? I don't, you know, it's not that way in other languages. And I want to rename us. I want to rename us from grandparents to grace parents, because I believe that the concept of grace in sharing that with our families is one of the most significant things that a grandparent can do. And so when we get judgmental, when we are too quick with our political opinions, when we try to control too much, and we need to talk about that in a second here too, mm-hmm. but when we do all of those things, we actually injure our ability to impact our grandchildren for Jesus Christ. And, you know, I will say this again. I want, more than anything else, I want my grandkids in heaven with me. And I need to not be a stumbling block towards that being the case. I need to be an influence in the positive directions in order to be able to see that come about.
Well, I love that. And yeah, let's just dive into that concept, because you speak in your book about the concept contrasting control versus influence. Now, I think this is something that we need to dive into, because you can't really go to any family gathering without hearing people joking about their in-laws. You know, there's a lot of jokes about that, or you know, jokes about, you know, you're sitting on the psychiatry couch and the person says, well, you know, it all started with my mother. Like, it all goes back to that.
Yeah.
And I think when our
different
choices, it can be really painful for their parents. And I'm just now starting in that journey. My oldest is 20, and I know that there are things that she's going to do differently and say, I will never do things like this. And that, I pray that God would protect my heart and that I wouldn't be too defensive about that, because I know there's certainly things I've done differently. And I think that when we start to see that, our natural kind of sinful or just plain human reaction is to control things. We want to control it because we get scared. But you talk about the difference between control and influence, and there is a big difference, isn't there, Larry?
Yes. Well, probably about 20 years ago, I wrote a book where I talked about the role of a parent. I described parenting this way. I said, parenting is a process of letting go of control, that you offer a lot of control when you have a little baby, and over the years, if you're a wise parent, you release control until the time where they move out and they're on their own. But you don't want to just let go of control. You want to replace control with influence. And influence is really very, very different as to how it comes into play. Well, then when you become a grandparent, one of the things that we need to tell ourselves is we don't have any control anymore over our adult children. But yet, if things start to go wrong, many times, because we're their parent, we'll try to control again. And it never turns out good. It always turns out bad, Jessica, when we try to control our adult kids. Control comes through God-given authority. That's our job when they're in our home and when we're raising them. That's our job. But Influence does not come through control. Influence comes through a relationship. And so as they get older, we want to lean more and more into the relationship so that we have influence rather than trying to control them. When things go bad, what do? Well, we should be leaning more and more into the relationship, in knowing that doing so will allow us then to have influence in the lives of our adult children or our older grandchildren.
Well, the things you're saying, Larry, are pretty tough. I mean, you've already told the grandparents, apologize for your 2% of the wrongs, and now we have to have to stop controlling everything. I don't know. People might be getting frustrated, but you know, these things are not easy, and they're not quick. But if you're looking for that answer of doing something different, my friends, this is it. Now, Larry, you talk about three different kind of negative things that grandparents do, and really, we do it as parents, too, when you're trying to control. And I want to walk through those one at a time here. And one is you try to reparent, like, oh, maybe I didn't get it right the first time. I'm going to continue to parent you as an adult. Why is that a harmful strategy?
Well, it almost always pushes the adult child away. They're thinking, whether they say it out loud or not, they're thinking, look, I'm an adult here. Why are you telling me all these things? And I don't know if it's in that particular section of the book or not, Jessica, but I often say, this is not original with me, but advice given when it's not asked for is almost always received as criticism. So when we try to reparent, that's what we're doing.
Ooh, say that again, Larry. Stop and say that again. That was really good.
Well, advice when it's not asked for.
I know, I'm going to put you on the spot, right?
Criticism. Yeah.
That is so good. I am writing that down. Okay, all right, keep going.
Well, so that's number one. You were saying there's number two and number three you wanted to talk about,
yes,
right?
Number two. Number two is blaming and guilt tripping. And I think that, you know, especially around the holiday season, I see a lot of conversation about this. You know, I'm in the middle stage of parenting, Larry, where my kids are getting older, and, you know, and I see a lot of my friends where their kids are just now starting to have new relationships. They're getting married. They have young kids, and they feel torn in a million different directions, and they feel this blame or guilt tripping, you know, like, well, you'll be the only one who's not there if you don't come, or, you know, we don't get to see your kids as much, or, you know, you didn't come all year. How can we go against that tendency that we want to do, or how can we respond to that?
Well, I think we need to realize that it's negative, and we realize that it's sin. Let me tell you that not in the family situation, but in a ministry situation recently, I was very disappointed by a situation that presented itself. And I was wanting to blame the other person, and frankly, I didn't do anything to contribute to it, but I had to have a come to Jesus moment with myself and ask God for forgiveness for the resentment that I was feeling in my heart, because it was hindering me from having the kind of relationship I needed to with this other ministry person. And it's amazing how that when I confessed that to God, all of a sudden I didn't feel the need to blame or guilt trip again. And so that's a real important thing for us to realize in family relationships too.
I agree. And, you know, as someone on the other end of that, you know, who I did experience a lot of guilt tripping and the, you know, relationship struggle that I had. And that was, it just honestly made me want to run away, want to hide. Like, I don't want to be around that. And it's not compelling. It really does put distance, like you talked about before. Okay, we've talked about reparenting. We've talked about blaming or guilt tripping. Here's the last one, justifying our position. Ooh, that's a hard one. That's really hard not to do. What does that mean, and how do we go against it?
Well, sometimes justifying our position really is as a result of pride. Let me be a real transparent with a story that I think will illustrate this a little bit. I grew up on a cattle ranch in western Nebraska. And so that's my heritage. That's my background. Skip forward to just a few years ago at Thanksgiving time, our grandchildren came to visit us, and those little grandkids that were, you know, I helped father for a while, are now young adults, and they came to visit. Well, my oldest grandson announced when he got there that he had decided that he was going to become a vegan. Well, you can imagine.
On a cattle ranch?
What a kid growing up on the cattle ranch thinks of being a vegan. But I didn't say anything. I didn't. My wife, Diane, she accommodated him and his diet and tried to make sure that he had always had something to eat that matched his concern. But I didn't say anything. And then Thanksgiving was over, and about January came, and I got a call from my daughter. And she says, "Dad, Tyler's really angry at you." And I said, "What did I do?" And she said, "Well, don't you remember? He said he was vegan." I said, "I didn't say anything." And she said, "You didn't have to. Your face said it all."
Oh.
And I was judgmental through my body language. I didn't even have to say anything. And that body language hurt my relationship with my oldest grandson that I love so very, very much. And so that got resolved because I knew I need to ask for forgiveness. Remember, forgiveness is often the first step. And so, but I wanted to let him know that I was really serious. So I decided I was going to try to go on a vegan diet myself.
No way.
And so for a couple of weeks, I didn't eat any meat, and it about killed me. But my son-in-law, my daughter had remarried by that time. I have a wonderful, godly son-in-law now. And anyway, he learned what I was doing, and he told Tyler. Tyler called me, and he says, "Grandpa," he said, "I hear you're going on a vegan diet." And I said, "Oh, I am so sorry, Tyler, I didn't mean to hurt you and offend you. Please, please forgive me." And he said, "Well, Grandpa, you're forgiven. And by the way, you don't need to do the vegan diet anymore." I was so glad. I went right out and ate a hamburger right away. It's the best hamburger I ever had. But if I had not been willing to ask for forgiveness and to not be judgmental and to realize that that can hinder a relationship, and that I had done it through body language, not even through spoken words. If I hadn't realized that, I would have had a tough time having a relationship with my grandson.
Well, that's an amusing and very touching story, Larry. I love it. It sounds like a win-win, because not only did you get a hamburger, you know, which this Texas girl can relate to, you know, your relationship was restored over something as simple as what you said earlier. Really struck me. You were willing to lay down your pride. You didn't want to justify your position. And, you know, and I'm just picturing the irony of this, even as the Lord using this story as an example, that the fact that you were on a cattle ranch, I just think that's really hilarious. But one of the things that you talk about,
well, scripture,
yeah, go ahead.
Scripture has something to say about eating meat or not eating meat, and I knew that that was a lesser issue than my relationship with my grandson and my ability to influence him for Jesus Christ. And that's one of the things grandparents have to do. They have to decide, is this a lesser issue or not? And that, to me, was a lesser issue. I wanted to see my grandson really follow the Lord, and I didn't want to be a stumbling block to him.
And you wanted him to be in heaven with you, which I think is beautiful. Now,
amen.
Larry, you bring up a great point, though, because this is a lesser issue. Now, there are grandparents every day all around facing issues they don't see as lesser. They're seeing much more significant issues, significant spiritual issues, moral issues, ethical issues, all kinds of things. And you talk about the importance of truth but balancing that with grace. So we can't compromise truth, yeah. But I love how you frame that we also can't compromise grace. So how do we reconcile those things for those people who are struggling, for those grandparents who are struggling with bigger issues?
Well, let me provide a little bit of a back scenario for that. And I talk about that in particular in relationship to when you have a family member that is denying faith, walking away from it, rejecting it, whatever it is. And probably if that's the case, you are probably about the only Christian involved in their life. They probably rejected relationships with other believers. And that kind of leaves you as the only Jesus representative to them. And I thought a long time, so what does that mean? And God just directed me to John 1:14, that end of the paragraph, a long passage that talks about the deity of Jesus. And at the end it says that he was full of grace and truth. And it doesn't mean it means full of grace and full of truth. In other words, Jesus was a complete embodiment of grace and a complete embodiment of truth, correct?
Absolutely.
So if we're going to represent Jesus, we have to be full of grace and full of truth. However, most of us grandparents are more likely to lean into wanting to be full of truth, and we're not so quick to be full of grace. And we have to find a balance in that. And that's, we'll talk more about it after the break.
Yes, we absolutely will. And we're also going to talk about grandparents who are now parenting their grandchildren and what they do if their kids are leaving the faith and how they can be that only Jesus to their grandkids. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends, to this encouraging conversation we are having for grandparents today. So whether you're a parent or a grandparent, this conversation is for you. We've been talking with Larry Fowler, the founder of Legacy Coalition, a national ministry focused on equipping Christian grandparents to fulfill their biblical role of impacting their grandchildren. And if you've been listening, I've been talking today about my own grandmother, my granny, who everybody who knew her, literally everyone, the postman, the police officer in the neighborhood, everyone called her granny, and how she was such a legacy of faith for me and the inspiration behind my book. Now, I've written a book for parents, but listen, I have been hearing from a lot of grandparents who have found it very helpful. It's called Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. Now, if you're a grandparent and you're looking at the landscape of what is out there and what is facing our kids, and you're wondering what kind of craziness has taken over the world, and you feel like maybe you don't really understand it. Listen, I feel the same way, and I'm a mom for sure. I would encourage you to get this. Now, throughout the book, I do have something called legacy letters. At the end of each chapter, there is a prompt for grandparents and parents to write a letter, a physical letter to their child or grandchild. Now, kids today often see communication as digital and disposable. You think about it, even parents were guilty of this. Even if we're in the same house, we may be texting our kids in the other room that it's time for dinner. They rarely see our handwriting, and that can be something really special to give to them. And there's a catch, though. The catch is that if you write this letter, you have to give it with no strings attached. Leave it somewhere they can find in private. Never expect the gratitude of a response. Just know that it is a step of obedience and an act of service and love that you never know what impact that might have. And I've shared some stories along the way of people who have written legacy letters, and I'll be sharing more of those as they come. Now, Larry has written a book too, and I really strongly encourage you to get it, Overcoming Grandparenting Barriers, How to Navigate Painful Problems with Grace and Truth. Now, this book is so practical. It was so eye-opening for me. And before the break, we were talking about this concept, Larry, this concept of grace and truth. And you pretty courageously said that grandparents are good and leaning in heavy on the truth, but the grace can be more challenging. So what else do you have to add to that?
Well, yes, my generation, I grew up, Jessica, going to a Bible college. I looked for Bible-believing churches, Bible-preaching churches. I attended Bible conferences. I've always had a really high view of truth. But I have to confess that my view of grace hasn't been so high. And when I'm saying grace, I'm not talking about the grace I've received as salvation, but the grace that I share with others. So, you know, I'm kind of naturally inclined, because of the way that I grew up, to want to speak truth really, really quickly into relationships, when maybe my strategy ought to be something different. And so what did Jesus do? Jesus was full of grace and full of truth. But as a strategy, he often led with one or the other, and it's significant to know when he led with grace, when he led with truth. He led with truth often to the disciples, and he certainly led with truth to the Pharisees. But you know what? When it came to people that were just common sinners, Jesus led with grace 100% of the time. And, you know, the story in the Bible that I think illustrates that so much is the story of the woman caught in adultery. Men brought this woman to Jesus, and they said, the law says to stone her. What do you say? They said, she was caught in the very act. And Jessica, I always wondered, where was the guy? If she was caught in the act, why didn't they drag the guy along too, you know?
Amen.
But yeah. And so they are asking Jesus to pronounce truth. They said, what do you say? And Jesus, remember, he kneels down. He doesn't say anything. He started writing in the sand. I also wondered, what did he write in the sand? Because whatever he writes, the men start leaving one at a time, from the oldest to the youngest. I think maybe he was writing the names of some women they had been messing around with. And that's why I have some theories about this story. But you know, he gets to the end, and all that way he shows grace. And he says, woman, where are your accusers? She said, they're not here. They've left. And he said, then neither do I condemn you. And all of that was grace. And then at the end, he pronounces truth. Go and sin no more. And grace was the thing that made it possible for her to hear truth. And we get it so mixed up sometimes. I had a grandma tell me one time, she said, my son has declared himself to be an atheist. And My other lady friends in the Bible study I'm in keep telling me, just give him the gospel, give him the gospel. There's power in the gospel. Give him the gospel. And I said, so how's it working for you? And she said, well, he's won't hardly talk to me anymore. And as a strategy, she was leading with truth. But I said, so what if, for the next 10 years, because she told me it had been 10 years that he had declared himself to be an atheist. I said, so what if the next 10 years you dedicated yourself to trying to shower him with grace instead of shower him with truth? She wasn't sure she could do that. But we show grace so that people will receive truth. And that's why as grandparents, we need to be grace parents. We lead with grace so that people will hear the truth and respond to the truth. So critical in the grandparent role.
I love that you said that. We show grace so people will receive truth. Now, I can tell you a story too, Larry, illustrating this about my granny, who I'm talking about incessantly, and I'm not even sorry. I'm really not. But, you know, when one of her children was not going to church at all, they had three children who were very young. So she had, these were her grandchildren. And so what she did, she could have said, you know, why aren't you going to church? I raised you to go to church. It's not okay that you're not going to church. You need to be in church. She could have lectured him. She could have gone that route. But she didn't. She said, hey, can I come pick up your kids on Sunday morning and take them with me? And they said, sure. Yep. And so every Sunday morning, she would drive quite a ways across town to pick them up and then take them to church. And then even more than that, she had cooked dinner the night before, and she would invite the parents over and they would come to pick up the kids. They would all have lunch together on Sunday afternoons. I was there and we would talk about, you know, what had happened in church. And there was not any shame in that. And just recently at my granny's funeral, one of my cousins, who is now a grown up with his own children, he told me that that had been one of the most impactful things that she had done on his life. And I think that's really hard, because there are a lot of grandparents who are being, you know, pushed away, or they're afraid because they see their kids leaving behind their faith and they're worried about their grandchildren. So what specific advice would you give to them? One of the things you said in your book that I loved, Larry, was that the most regular kids who attend most regularly church are workers' kids and grandparents' kids. So what kind of advice do you have for grandparents who are in that kind of situation?
I have some advice for the rest of the church, more than for them, because, you know, grandparents that are raising their kids, Jessica, aren't really able to even be grandparents. They're being parents. Mm-hmm. And many times, most all the time, grandparents are raising grandchildren or stepping into the parent role and doing parent things, do so because of a tragedy, because of a really bad decision, a crisis in their families. And so when they do that, or when they're in that situation, they're awfully embarrassed. They often feel alone. And you know, if you're a grandparent and you take your kids to church and the church says, we're going to have a parent meeting for all the parents of the kids in children's ministry, you feel not included, you know, like you're kind of the outsider. And they get tired quicker. There are so many issues that we need to recognize in our churches about grandparents raising grandkids. So really my message is to the rest of the church, look, you need to realize what a load these grandparents bear, and you need to step in and be a help to them. They're often a more needy group of people for support and help than single moms. Single moms often have a support system. You know, they'll have a sister or a mother that help them. But if you're a grandparent raising grandkids, you don't have a support system. And so we need to step up as a church and really love on them and be the support system to them that they don't have.
Well, preach it, Larry. I mean, I feel like you should say it louder for the people in the back, because that is so wise. And thinking about how it particularly struck me what you said about possibly not feeling welcome, like you're walking in and automatically, you know, I'm thinking of the grandparents who brought their kids to the children's ministry when my kids were in there. And automatically there's a little question in your mind, right? Like, ooh, what happened to that family? Yep. Why are they here? Why is the grandparent here? What did their kids do bad? What's wrong with them as a parent that they had that? I can't imagine the weight of that, like literally carrying that in with you. That would be really hard.
I was at a conference a few years ago. I had a booth for our ministry at a conference. And in the afternoon, when things were really pretty quiet, this man came up to me with a walker. And he wanted to know if we had any support system for grandparents raising grandchildren. And I was not from that area, so I directed him, to the host church, because, I was from somewhere else. But anyway, he told me that he and his wife are raising four young teenagers. and that one of them had ADD really bad, and there was a lot of challenges, and I just felt for him. And then as he turned to go, he said, I need to leave. I want to make sure that there's plenty of time for us to get into the evening session. And my wife has MS, so it takes us a longer period of time. So here's a grandfather with a walker, and his wife has MS, and they're raising four grandkids. Now, somebody needs to show some compassion and support and help to people like that. And often we're not aware of that in our churches.
I feel like I want to go find them right now and just help them, because that is really powerful. That's a very powerful perspective, Larry. And in our last few minutes together, I want to pivot and look at the other extreme. We've looked at these grandparents who are functioning as parents. Let's talk about the grandparents who have a lot of distance. Their kids have moved away. They're not close, you know, for a job or maybe a relationship estrangement. What hope would you offer for those grandparents who are just aching to be close to their grandkids?
Well, you've got to take advantage of all, you know, FaceTime and the ability that technology brings. You need to spend your money to go visit them. You need to, when you go visit them, not just have family time, but individually date every single grandchild and spend individual time with them. You will have far greater impact in one-on-one conversations with them. So take them out for ice cream or coffee, whatever it is, whatever is appropriate. And then don't forget all the old methods of snail mail. Young people today never ever get anything in their mailbox. When you send a postcard to them saying, I love you, I'm praying for you, you know, it's amazing. It's like something really new and unique for them. They've never had that happen before. And then pray for them. Become very intentional about praying for them on a regular basis. We have seven grandkids, so we assign each one a day of the week, and we pray for them that way.
Oh, that's a beautiful legacy to have. And, you know, as you're talking about that, you reference this in the book about retirement narcissism and saying, you know, hey, don't ruin our kid-free life. Like, we don't want to be too inconvenienced. And, you know, Larry, I am so grateful that I have in-laws who have not done that. When my father-in-law retired, he said he wanted to invest in time with my kids. They moved from New Jersey to Houston to be just a few minutes from us, and they have invested their time, their resources financially, everything, and it has paid dividends now that my kids are older. Well, Larry, we've talked about so many good things, and I would encourage grandparents to go back and listen, do the legacy letters, but you have a children's book coming out, which is perfect timing for all these grandparents wanting to buy Christmas gifts for their grandkids. What's it called, and where can we find it?
Go to legacycoalition.com, our website/wish. LegacyCoalition.com/wish. The book is called My Wish of All Wishes, and it says the expression of a grandparent's passion that I want my grandkids in heaven with me.
Well, you heard it right here. What greater gift could you give your kids, your grandkids for Christmas than a hope and a prayer for them to be in heaven? We have been talking to Larry. Thank you so much, Larry, for this hope, and we'll see you next time, friends.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.